podcast is a member of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with gold and jewels, and a red dragon. He starts to breathe. Save or die!
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classic Dungeons & Dragons. If it's in a box, we'll talk about it.
The Save or Die Podcast, adventure number 52. I'm sitting in DM Vince alongside DM Michael.
Oi.
Oi. DM Liz. DM Crispy.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, DM Full On Gamer.
Greetings, Gamer Nation.
Coming over from the Thacko's Hammer podcast to show us the light, right, Full On Gamer?
It's all D&D to me.
There we go. So what's
I'm
everyone...
saying for in front of it.
Yeah. Then it's not D&D, all right. So, Crispy, what have you been up to? We haven't heard anything from you in a while.
Nothing. I've not played Dungeons & Dragons in a very long time, and it makes me very sad.
It's a shame you weren't here for the last episode we recorded, because virtually every email we read, they were saying, Crispy, I agree with you when you said this,
yeah.
And hey, Crispy, I just wanted to tell you this. It's like, man, Crispy needs to be here. Everyone's talking to him.
It's because I'm very agreeable.
The most lovable person on the cast, I guess.
Maybe. Especially when he talks like Trask.
Yeah.
No, people were telling me, like, Crispy, with the Trask things, like, if you would have just kept doing the Trask thing, we would have had, like, a $1 million show going on. Because everybody said they tuned in just to hear what Trask did that week.
I tried to be as entertaining as I could.
Yeah.
It is physically taxing to do that voice.
For an hour and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
For a while, though, you were going pretty wild with that voice.
I burnt myself out a little bit. But, yeah, like, you don't realize, like, do a weird voice that's not yours for an hour. Just talk incessantly in that voice, and then people will know. You're like, oh, holy crap, my voice, it hurts.
And yeah. You don't even get a paycheck.
I know. I was mutilating my own throat for you, the fans.
Yeah, but you were mutilating your throat, and you could have talked like one of these guys afterwards.
Yet another voice.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to have, like, deep, gruff movie theater guy voice as my actual voice.
Yeah. That's right.
I'll let you borrow mine.
Yeah, for a gamer could do a movie voice.
Where I need coffee, you... Jennifer will make it for me. Black, 2 sugars.
Don't forget the rat poison.
Like, just go around it, man. Everything you do.
But when I do, I play basic.
Yeah. So, Mike and Liz.
Mike and Liz.
One person. We've narrowed it down. Let's just put you into one person now. You guys have been out of town last week, right?
Yeah. Had some emergencies pop up in Tyler we had to rush and do.
The lovely East Texas metropolis of Tyler.
Yay. Dun, da, da. Sounds like fun.
Well, it was nice seeing my parents. I got my hair cut.
Oh, Thorky will like that.
Hung out.
Nagged my artist.
Nagged your artist?
Yeah, for Victorious, getting the last art pieces.
What's going on with that? When's that coming out?
Over to Trollhunter Games.
When's it coming out?
I'm not saying. Because as soon as I give you a date, I'm going to be wrong. It's supposed to be next on the plate after the current 30s pulp game that they're putting out, Amazing Adventures.
Oh, Glenn will like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would be interested in that, like a John Carter kind of Tarzan-y kind of game.
Closer to Tarzan than John Carter. Actually, Victorious is more John Carter-ish. So, but yeah, it's more two-fisted Doc Savage-y.
Yeah, purchase both.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, purchase both. Make Mike rich.
Like, I probably will buy Victorious.
Cool.
Because that's the kind of friend I am.
Aww.
I personally will not buy Victorious at a pro... No, I'm just kidding.
because that's the kind of friend
That's right.
And so I can earn hundreds of dollars a year in the lucrative field of game design.
Yes, you capitalist person, you.
Ah.
Taking advantage of us OSR gamers.
Yes, all the pennies. All the pennies.
Yes, you will be a hundredaire.
A hundredaire, that's me.
Yeah.
It'll pay for North Texas RPG Con next year.
Yay!
Worth it right there.
Yeah.
Sure, right. I was talking to Mike about the mini con that he wanted to do sometime in the middle of the year. He wants to do like a North Texas RPG Con mini con.
Yeah, I mentioned out, tried to pimp Denton to him, so.
That's what I did too, and he's like, no, I'm going to put it in Plano. Like, why Plano? He's like, there's so many people from Plano that want to go to this con, but it's just way too far for them.
Too far.
Yeah. Fallon, how many hours did you travel to the convention?
3.5
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that too far? Plano, oh no, it's a whole other subdivision. Yeah, I can't drive that far.
I hit the road at 5 in the morning, I played until 1 in the morning, and I made it back by 3:30 in the morning. Okay.
Yeah, so...
Ooh, I could not do that. Not without being dead on the side of the road somewhere.
Come on, Liz. Remember our 18-hour car trips to Tucson?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we had like 5 or 6 other people to swap out driving with.
Oh, yeah. There is that.
And to sing horrid songs in each other's ears to keep us awake.
Yeah.
19 people in a 10-person van.
Yay. That sounds like a song already.
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, those... Well, I won't say good old days. They were days. Yeah,
yes. I haven't had that. I haven't gotten those days yet. But I'm going to PAX this year, up in Seattle, and we're road tripping up from San Diego, a couple friends and I. So I'm looking forward to playing D&D in the car and singing Queen at the top of our lungs.
Excellent. Rocking it out like we
sounds
did.
Like fun.
I recommend surfaces with sides to contain dice.
Yeah,
and. Perhaps forgo miniatures unless they're very large.
I am not a miniatures guy. Like, I'm not a miniatures guy, so.
I speak from experience. We did gaming in a van on a way to Gen Con once, and it was doable. You get a lot more RP done than the combats, but you can still get good combats done, too.
We can play Cthulhu Dice. So what's that Cthulhu game? With the one die and the little beads?
Oh, Cthulhu Dice by Steve Jackson Games.
Yeah, that's fun to play in the car. Just one dice to roll and try to take each other over and make them insane.
Yeah. One dice to roll, one dice to hold them.
One dice to rule them all?
Yeah.
And one to bind them, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Well.
On to me. Yay! Oh, sorry. I've been busy, you know, chilling out, watching the TV show Jericho. I don't know if anyone remembers that TV show.
I got to see, like, the first episode or two of it, and then I didn't get to see any more.
And then it was gone.
It was really good.
Yeah, it actually turned out to be a really good show that lasted 2 seasons about how the United States purposely blew itself up to restart everything over and recreate itself. And it was like a post-apocalyptic thing, and it was really good towards the end, and then they, you know, got canceled, of course.
So it's Fight Club when it's the government's idea.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much. You just have to get past Skeet Ulrich as the lead character. That's about it. Mm. Once you get past that, it's a pretty good show. Other than that, you know, I'm in gaming. We're running Marvel on Saturday nights now.
In cool. Our
Skype game. Crispy might be joining us. He's not sure yet.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with my gaming group. I can't.
You may be making Trask the superhero.
You know what?
What?
If I can't get a game going on Saturdays, I will do that.
Trask superhero?
Yeah. It'll be like a Thor kind of thing, where like instead of an Asgardian, he's a dwarf from like Norse mythology.
That's the beauty of superhero games. You can import literally any concept.
Oh my god, it's going to destroy everything. I can see it now.
It's going to be Thor and his magic axe.
Oh jeez.
Valhallan,
my mighty axe!
I shall thrash you most heinously.
Anyway, some other news. This will be my last show doing as a host. Mike will be taking over host of the show. Yeah, I'm just going to focus on RFI for now and just be executive producer of this cast, much like how I am executive producer of the other cast that we shall not mention, that second edition nobody likes and listens to. Oh, wait. Thacko's Hammer?
I just want to take this opportunity to say, Vince,
yes,
that you are always welcome as a guest host on any future episodes of Save or Die, if you should decide that you want to pop in and hang out with us again.
Although, if you do, maybe you could be a little less tactful and you know...
Yeah, you're too tactful. That's
guarded with your statements.
Not at all. That no one would like to listen to the show if I was, so... not to say that I won't be doing interviews, because it might be a time that you guys have to be like, well, we can't do this interview, and you can record, so go do the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Or I might just come in just to annoy everybody. You know, one of those good things. But Mikey will be taking over, so we'll see how it goes, and we'll see if the ratings drop. Or no, I'm kidding.
Nah, as long as Liz is here, we're okay.
Yes, we have many loving Liz fans, apparently, in the forums.
Not sure why, but there it is.
Hey, you're a gamer.
Well, you're a girl, that helps.
You're a gamer girl.
Gamer? Oh, I must marry her.
Okay, that was scary.
So, anyway...
Hi, Liz. What? Do you like dice? I like dice.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any email?
No. Do you like comic books, too? No, we have to hear from Mr. Full-On Gamer what he's been up to.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Mostly unpacking. Haven't started looking for the local gaming group in Lawton yet, or trying to craft one out of nothing, if necessary. But got to go down to the NTRPG Con and run my Battletech down there. That was fun and enjoyable. Got to meet Mike and Liz and Vince and...
Glenn
and all kinds of other interesting people. It was good.
And my Battletech-addicted friend, Ben.
Yeah. He enjoyed himself, and I was glad to put on a good show for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
He's still talking about the game.
That means it was a good game.
It was a good game.
Insane, too, if you looked at it, because it was just so far those guys had to go up that mountain. I was like, oh, my God.
They just have, like, a ton of, like, custom-painted armies. I don't actually know anything about Battletech yet.
It was the biggest Battletech map I have ever seen.
Well,
there may be some bigger ones out there, but I've never seen one that big before. It was
bigger than you.
It was bigger than me.
All that was two classic Battletech map sheets placed end to end.
Yeah.
At proper scale.
At proper scale, there you go.
Well, they spent a lot of time fighting each other. That's probably why it took so long, so...
That's one of the requirements of the scenario. It's a King of the Hill scenario. It's an uphill battle against entrenched defenders with people you can't trust. Go.
Like, you talk about them fighting each other, but I mean, like, the game is called Battle. Like, it's right in there.
Not tree-hugging tech.
All right, disconnecting Mike.
It's like peace and understanding tech.
Disconnecting Crispy next.
Anyway. Peace on Earth tech.
Do we have any emails this week? I don't know. I don't have that.
We do have emails.
Immediately changes the subject.
I'm just following up on Mike's change of the subject before, so.
Yes. Yeah, suddenly everyone wants email now.
Go ahead, Liz.
All right. We have two emails.
Yay.
But you have to sound like Glenn.
I don't think my voice can do that.
Hi, I'm DM Glenn.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah.
All right. Our first email is from Referee Ollie.
Referee, ooh.
Hey, Ollie.
Hey, Ollie. Hello, Ollie.
Stanley.
Ollie says, hello, I've just caught up with your current episode. Listening to the past episodes while jogging has been a real blast. Thank you for your hard work and enthusiasm. I have some comments, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Alignment and personality. In my humble opinion, in OD&D, alignment doesn't tell us that much about the personalities of the characters, because it's really a team affiliation. I admit that after Good and Evil came along, things got a bit mixed up. What do you guys think about Law versus Chaos, Moorcock, Civilization versus Wilderness, Monotheistic Religion versus Magic, Steampunk versus Elves and Stuff, Mankind versus Demons of the Outer Dark,
Dogs and Cats,
Living together, Mass Hysteria, Altruism versus Selfishness? Well, Ollie, if we respond just to that brief paragraph, it'll probably be the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say that I love Moorcock.
That's right. Made his feelings about Moorcock very plain in past episodes.
Oh, boy.
Like, anytime, like, Moorcock comes up, I'm all over that.
It's true. Indeed. True story.
Yeah, I've seen Crispy all over that, like a champ.
I can get down on some more comments.
All right, enough.
Okay. Getting back to the email. Illusionism and player agency. In your game mastering tips, you often recommend going down the dark path of illusionism. You know, if the players kill the important NPC, just reveal that he was a clone. If the players turn the wrong way, all roads lead to Rome, etc. Is this Dragonlance talking? In my humble opinion, RPGs work best if the players get to make meaningful decisions. The players can't make meaningful decisions if they can't get information on their possible choices, or if the choices they make don't matter. What do you guys think about illusionism and the choices players make? Keep up the good work, Ollie.
Well, if you didn't do that, your players would be going all over the place and you wouldn't have a controlled adventure. You'd have to control it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, having a set sandbox would help, but that's kind of a difficult thing to do.
Well, I also think there's a difference between giving several plot hooks to a particular adventure and railroading.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to give a few plot hooks, but if the players are just bound and determined to ignore them, fine. You know, you want to spend 4 hours shopping for belts? That's a game you want? Okay.
This one has sparkles.
I'm not going to make them.
And as for, like, moving your bad guy and replacing him with Doombots, it's a matter of, like, when do you want them to kill the big bad? Like, if they meet the big bad and he's just supposed to antagonize them and, like, disappear, but they, you know, they kill him before he can disappear. Well, there goes all my other plans. There's a time and a place for when you kill the big bad, and maybe that particular place wasn't it.
And it kind of depends on how much of a fan you are and how skilled you are at DMing improv on the fly. If you have done your homework, done your research, got things prepared for them, it's part of that mutual buy-in I've talked about before, that the DM is responsible to present a universe that the players can make meaningful choices in. The players are kind of responsible for making choices that further the story.
Yes.
And not just go off out into the, I'm going across that open field, and I'm going to stop when I find the Trask.
Yeah, like my best friend is running a game for two of his other friends. And they're not really D&D players. They like to roleplay and, like, have character interaction. And he's trying to craft a story. But the way the game is set up is it's very against their kind of organic play style. So they don't want to bite into anything. And I keep telling them you have to tell them to make proactive characters. If they're not going to...
They're expecting the story to be basically handed to them.
Yeah, like, they have to go and get the story.
Well, make the story... You can make
they
the
don't
story-
want to do that, then there's no game.
Sure there is. You make the story attack them, that's all.
He has. Like, that's what he's been doing, is he's been trying to come up with things to involve them, but it kind of keeps falling flat for him, or at least that's my understanding of what it tells me.
If they need to run a prison game,
Yeah,
and wake up in a jail cell.
Yeah.
If you would like to leave,
press 1.
Here's the time where the guards are passing by and sleeping, or whatever.
Well, we had a friend that gamed with us for a while, and she was a good player, but the past game that she had been in, or her past DM, had been one of those, you know, antagonistic DM versus player, you know, kind of paradigms. And so she had a hard time getting used to being in a game where the DM was not specifically out to get the players. And so she was scared to make decisions. It wasn't that she, you know, didn't know how to, but she worried over much about whether or not she was going to make the right decision. And if she did the wrong thing, you know, bam, she's dead. So I suppose that could be part of a problem too. You know, you get a character, you get a player who's, you know, scared to move. Yeah, scared to move.
And it goes both ways too, because you've got to deal with occasionally players whose sole intent and stated purpose is to break the game.
Yeah, I've got a friend like that who, I have a story that I tell of why, like,
sit back, folks.
Why I hate power gamers and people who are just in it to
win it.
To really just win.
I'm not even the system. Break the character or break the game system. I'm talking about break the game play.
Yeah, they're in it to win.
Like, not even to win. It's to
mess everything up.
Yeah, whatever story is being presented and ensure that it cannot be done, that it will not be done, that it's not about the story or the other players or the adventure it's about, they made everything fail.
I would kick that person out.
I would kick that person out.
Because, and, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I have friends who are, you know, they're my friends, but I wouldn't game with them because their gaming style is either they don't game or they've got a gaming style that just doesn't work with mine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, those people, if they're screwing up the game for everybody, then it's not right for everybody to suffer because this person gets their jollies by wrecking everyone else's fun.
Exactly.
But
back to the point of question, you still have to be able to have something there for the players to go to. Now, it's either going to be a plan that you've laid out, which could be a line or a web, but it still has points and connections that are reasonable and make the story move, or it's going to be the open sandbox and you got to be fast on your toes and flexible.
Yeah.
What is your DM style? What is your strengths? What can you do the best at?
I tend to prefer the sandbox myself.
Sometimes don't.
Same here.
Yeah, I prefer the sandbox because, you know, I would like them to go do something, but if they're bound and determined not to go do it, okay, that's cool. You know, we'll go find something else to do. Or, like I said, 4 hours of shopping for a belt, which has happened.
Just has sparkles on it.
This one has
studs.
Now, it was not Liz. I will say right now, it was not Liz.
They get a belt to match every cloak.
She did. The person I'm referring to, it was... I will not say belt, it was clothes, but yeah, it was 4 hours.
Clothing in general.
4 frickin' hours.
And I want to go to the Law vs. Chaos question.
Back to Moorcock.
Back to Moorcock, no.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm playing more, you know, I come originally from like 3.5, and I used to like the 9-point alignment system. But after a while, I became, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about it, I became really disenchanted with alignment. I just did not like it. I felt like it was stupid, but, you know, I've been more and more getting into old versions of D&D and wanting to play those more, and I think the 3-point alignment system works perfectly for what I need.
Yeah, and when Ollie was saying earlier, it doesn't give a whole lot of, you know, detail to the personality. That's what I like about it.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a very general guideline, but it leaves the character or monster up to you.
Yeah, I like that you have most monsters are chaotic. Most evil monsters are chaotic, and then you have, like, your good guys who are, you know, aligned with law. And the way I look at it is the cosmic factor of, like, do you want to keep existing, or does everything want to fall into entropy?
Yeah.
So it's like existence versus not existence, or fractured existence. And
so, Liz,
I think that's cool.
Now, Liz, tell us why we're wrong.
Because Holmes says...
Because law being lawful or being chaotic, I do not agree with how the basic expert rules. You know, basically the assumption is if you are lawful, you are good. If you are chaotic, you are evil. And you can be good without being a completely law-abiding citizen. Now, if instead of calling it lawful and chaotic, they just called it good and evil, I'd be cool with that. Because you could be good, but you could either be a very law-abiding citizen, or you could be, you know, vigilante justice, you know, justice over law, that kind of thing. I don't like the terminology.
It's more about they have flipped... They trap themselves by trying to avoid a conflict, and it gives them a chance to create one. Because they didn't want to get into the whole ethical good and evil. That's fine. It works. You can do that. Star Wars does it just perfectly fine. Light side, dark side. Okay? Law and chaos, you get the same thing. And one of the good things about the basic system is it is about the generalities. It doesn't railroad your character and give you 9 strict alignments that people can say, you're not playing your character right. Even then, you still have room to work, and it's very flexible, but you'll have people who actually don't play their character right for the alignment they picked, and they take their penalties and get changed by the DM, or they don't.
But, see, I think this kind of feeds into what I was saying. It's not law-like... Yeah, it's not like that law.
It's not
kind of like organized, structured society. Like, do you want to have society, or do you want to have, like, the chaotic goblin hordes overrun and consume everything?
And for me, yes, law tends to be what humans would view as good, and chaos tends to be what humans would view as evil, but you're going to find exceptions in both.
Yeah.
Yes, and at least ask that strange little painter from Austria.
Yeah, that guy. I mean, yeah, not, you know, Nazis is one of my best examples. That's lawful, but in an evil sort of way.
Trademarked by George Lucas.
Yeah, I think because it's so broad and kind of nebulous, there's a lot of room for... There's a lot of wiggle room for... characters of that alignment in there. Like, you can have a guy whose alignment is lawful, but he's not necessarily good.
Yeah,
like I think the 3-point alignment system really works best if you use it as entropy versus existence.
Order and entropy?
Yeah,
it's
order and entropy.
It's perfectly fine to have chaotic player characters.
Mm-hmm.
To have chaotic players who are doing things for the story, for the party, for themselves, that are not painfully disruptive, they're not, you know, bloodbath in a box, pull cord in case of, you know, innocent victims, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can work around it.
And yeah.
It work for you.
I do agree the way the game was originally set up, it did take, especially with alignment languages.
Hey.
It did give that kind of absolute, or at least implied that absolute that Liz was talking about. I just feel like you don't need to be caught in that if you don't want to be.
Happen to like alignment languages, all right, pal?
You like?
I'm very sorry, Vince.
Being a first edition lover.
Hey, season 6 Futurama finale episode. What? Voidberg knows the language of peace.
Yes.
Like, I always took alignment language to... I don't want to get into this right
no,
now.
Yeah, that's a show all by itself.
That's a show.
No. Get into it, Crispy. Come on. Dig in. Let's go.
No. Let's move on.
Okay, move on to the next
email.
Okay.
Party pooper.
Our second email is from DM Kojo.
DM Kojo. I like that.
Hello, Kojo. Nice.
DM Kojo writes, "Greetings, Sodcasters. I have been going back through the older adventures of Sod recently and had a couple of thoughts."
Uh-oh.
First, in adventure number 17, you talked about critical hits. My method for doing critical hits and misses is if a 20 is rolled, the player then rolls again. On a 16 through 20, the critical hit is successful. I then roll on the good hits, bad misses tables from the article in Dragon Magazine number 39.
Woohoo!
For ones that are rolled, the player re-rolls and a 1 through 5 is a fumble. The same rules apply for NPCs and monsters. I find this makes the percentages of getting a crit or fumble a little less likely.
Yeah.
Also, in adventure number 28, you discuss the Minotaur. The way I like to play the Minotaur is to have a race of them, but that the original Minotaur of Greek myth is their god and spawned the race. This allows me to use the Greek pantheon and myths in my campaign without messing with the concept of a unique Minotaur.
Bull.
Crap.
Way to take it by the horns, Kojo.
Finally.
Oh,
that's some Cretan.
I was really hoping to hear a review of one of my favorite classic modules, XL1, Quest for the Heartstone. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I think it gets a bad rap because it was commercialized so much to promote the D&D action figure line when it came out. Keep up the great work, DM Kojo.
Thanks, Kojo.
Yeah. I wasn't on Adventure 17, but I remember where I was when I first listened to it, and getting really mad because I wasn't there to talk about critical hits.
And
like, basically, I'm in the mic camp. It doesn't fit with the system, and I don't use in my basic games.
Oh, I think critical hits are there, and I love them. So hot.
I love them too.
I got super incensed about like how the combat system and hit points actually works. And, like, I got into this big debate with a friend of mine over
it. It's a game.
It's a game. It was pretty nerdy.
It's a game.
And that's when I shot him, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And that's... Just pulled the trigger. I won the argument.
I mean, I like having a 20 or a 1 mean something more than, you know, just any other roll. But, like I said, I just do max damage without having to roll or, you know, a minus to your next initiative. Because, as I said before, I used to... you know, do live steel fighting, and you just don't do that kind of stuff in combat very often. The, oh, I drop my sword, which bounces and hits my friend in the head, and, you know, then shatters, causing, you know, an explosion or any of that kind of weirdness. It's like, that just, it doesn't happen 5% of the time.
I've done away with critical fumbles in every game I run, just because there's already a critical fumble. Like, it's built into the system. It's called missing.
Yeah.
There's so much more you can do with a one than just... You hit yourself, you hit your friend, you break your weapon, you drop your weapon. It's the time to bring in complications. It's the time to bring in something else went wrong. You can make it more interesting that way.
Spoken like AD&D.
What? That's not even AD&D talking. This is everything. This is the time when you're trying to sneak up and you roll a one, and okay, that's when you step on the stick.
It's like critical fumbles are never fun for the people they're happening to. It's a thing that's only good when it's happening to someone else.
Well, to be fair, it depends on the group you're with.
And you can make it fun.
There was a combat where when I did use them, Liz and all the players were just... There was, four fumbles in a row, and everybody's swords and maces were flying everywhere in the cave, and...
It's like the Ringling Brothers, like...
It was!
...juggling act.
And we were all dying laughing at the table, because it was the same combat, and just one by one, we rolled fumble. It's like, oh my god!
That was the combat that convinced me this just isn't going to work.
I remember.
It was hilarious, and we still talk about that game years later, which is why I will always like critical hits and fumbles, because however unrealistic you may find them, those tend to be the moments that gaming groups will refer to years later. It's like, hey, do you remember the time that Mead rolled a critical hit and a critical fumble, one after the other, you know, or...
Yeah, like, critical hits are fine. Like, I just don't use them in basic because, well, we don't really have that many hit points, honestly. And when you go up against a group of, like, 15 kobolds, and your level, you know, say you're level, like, 3, so you have, what's the average of 8-sided dice, 4.5?
You brought up kobolds just for Liz, didn't you?
Yes, puppies. So when you're fighting puppies... And they get 15 rolls against your fighter, who gets 3 rolls against each of them. Oh, yeah.
You're overanalyzing it too much. Stop it.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, getting back
it's
to
just
DM
the
Coach
odds are so
example,
stacked against the players, is what
back
I'm saying.
Getting back to DM Coach's example,
yes,
where he rolls the 20 or the 1, then rolls again... And on the second roll, if they get in that range, the critical hit or miss happens. You know, that does kind of take away from the 5% chance. You know, it makes your percentages smaller.
Yeah, but it's complicated.
It's just the 3.5-ism coming out. I mean, that's just the confirmation roll concept coming out.
It's different than a confirmation.
Which has a thing. And if you actually read the full text of the good hits, bad misses tables, they have that. There is a confirmation system for hits and for crits and fumbles in the system from the Dragon Magazine in the first place. Most people just skip all that and go straight to the tables. You got a 20, roll on this table.
Mm-hmm. Well, Liz, your argument is concise, well presented, and easily understood. You're wrong,
but you're still wrong.
No, like, she's right. It's for the throwdown.
You know what, Liz? I'm the host still, so you're right. Yeah, that counts as everything.
As you can see, opinions are wide and varied.
Indeed.
Whatever works best for you in your game, rock on with it.
Exactly. Whatever makes your game fun.
It's the McLaughlin group of gaming. What do you think of critical hits? Hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them, hate them. Critical hits are good!
The
next
answer
question.
Is yes!
42.
Exactly.
I generally just leave it up to the group, though. If they want to use criticals, fine by me.
Okay, so, and any more emails?
Those are the only two emails.
All right.
Does anyone have anything to say about the Minotaur concept?
I like it. It reminds me of myself and what I do with monsters.
Oh, you're referring yourself to as a Minotaur. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's the inclusive way to do it. That way, I'm an all-in kind of gamer anyway, so... Go for it. That sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. It's creative, inventive.
You get the use of minotaurs, plural, but you still keep the Greek mythos going.
The same thing can apply with, say, Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Medusa and the Medusa.
Yes.
That's how I am.
Greater Medusa.
The big ugly.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you'd like to write in, how could they do that, Liz?
You can write in by sending an email to saveordiepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay. That's awesome.
Is the hotline still down? 570-290-7283?
I don't know. I have to figure that out right now.
All right.
You can
don't
call.
Call.
Don't
Vince
call.
Will have to find out if we still have a phone or not.
You can always call the RFI hotline to give Save or Die a voicemail if need be, because I answer both of them. So
Vince is standing by.
I'm standing. Actually, I was standing by for one guy. He called, and I answered. I was like, hello. He's like, whoa.
Is this the DM Vince?
He's like, someone actually picks up the phone? I thought it was just a voicemail. I'm like, nah, dude, it's a phone.
Nah,
well, it is, but yeah.
Nah, bro, that ain't me.
Nah, bro, nah, bro.
No, this is DM Liz.
Hello!
Hello,
you have reached the Save or Die call center. How can I help you?
Aww.
This is Dave.
Yes, and I heard my...
Here, man.
Your call may be monitored for quality control.
But probably not.
Not at all. And I heard your little imitation of me last week, Michael.
What's that?
I heard your imitation of me last week, Michael.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's go to our first segment of Game On.
Really? That's all the only places people can write in at?
Or just that. Well, I mean, we're on the forums, but...
OSR Gaming forums. You can talk to us there.
D20 Radio forums.
But nobody
also
ever
has a place.
Nobody ever contacts
us. But it's there.
Nobody ever contacts us there.
I do, too.
Yeah, just you. That's it. We try. D20 Radio, OSRGaming.org, and Smoke Signals. We usually take those.
Yeah.
Game On, coming up next. So, Game On this week, I'm looking at the notes, we're talking about the most interesting low-powered or plus weapon your character has had. Let's talk about that. I'm not sure what you mean by that statement, Mike. We're just talking about what stories about plus one weapons, or...
Well, basically, the old plus one whatever is as common as dirt in most D&D, and... The question, or the premise for the section is, as a player, have you run into any plus one or plus two weapons that had personality or was something unusual?
Oh, yes.
Do tell, Paul.
Cool, do tell.
Tell us.
Well, let's see. Two varieties. One, the quite humorous. It was the Flame Tongue. Mm-hmm. Plus two Flame Tongue. Whose method of activation was both verbal and semantic. To make the Flame Tongue actually flame, you must take the sword and hold it on high over your head and announce in a loud and commanding voice, seize them and spank them.
Okay.
Whoosh! There you go.
And installs fear. Instills fear in your enemies.
One way or the other, I'm sure it does.
Okay.
But then the other flavor was a little bit more... that goes into something we'll get into a little bit later, where it's about all the other things that could be there other than a plus one. It was a simple little plus one sword called Fred. It was intelligent.
Fred.
And it had powers, and... Its powers were involved with
Fredness.
Well, no, it was actually a disintegrating sword.
Ah!
With a pretty wide range of things it would disintegrate. It was crafted actually on the lower planes for use against both upper, you know, good angelic creatures as well as all the fellow demonic, devilish creatures that you're either fighting against just in general or fighting against to get one up on, and it was crafted to be put into the world in general to cause chaos. Because it could smite both ways. It was a neutral sword.
AC/DC.
TNT. It's dynamite.
Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I think my personal favorite was my DM gave me a sword. It was just a plain longsword, but with, diamond teeth on it. And
oh, that's pretty cool.
And it always did at least 1 point of damage, no matter the resistance. And for every hit in combat, it gave my character 1 hit point. But it only lasted for that day. Whenever you went to sleep, it basically reset itself, and I lost any extra hit points.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't really that overpowered, but for a low-level character, it was kind of helpful.
Yeah, that would be.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me clarify. A hit that did damage gave me a plus one, not just any hit.
You just reminded me of a good story. Well, not a good story. An annoying story, I should say, about a sword that I had. I had a friend of mine that was DMing in the interim when DM Joe... disappeared for a while. He shouldn't have DM'd, but, you know, the rest of us were burnt out. And this guy had not a clue about DMing in his life, so he decided he was going to DM. His adventure revolved around Mr. Belvedere and and us attacking Mr. Belvedere's house. And
you,
Mr. Belvedere,
Falls, Pennsylvania?
Yes, and Mr. Belvedere kept throwing poo at us out of his window. What did you say, Crispy?
I said I used to live there.
Yes, you did. And I remember I got this sword from... Well, it wasn't a sword. It was an S-word, according to him. And I couldn't call it a sword. If I called it a sword, the sword would run away and not want me to use it. If I called it an S-word, it would light up and become a flame sword. And I could do 1d6 extra points of damage. But if I held on to it more than a round, it would burn my hand. So I was like, what's the point of this sword?
Your friend, kind of... He's bad at DMing.
Yes, I know. Henceforth, Mr. Belvedere's house we were attacking in D&D.
It's like a bad trip.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't like mushrooms.
But there's my crappy story.
No pun intended.
Yeah, really.
Wow. That, well, it's imaginative, I suppose, except for the whole Belvedere ripoff. But
I'm Mr. Belvedere. Bam! Slams a door on us.
At least it wasn't Alf.
Ugh.
Yes, well.
Oh, man, Alf would make a great monster. Like this
especially
fuzzy
if
cat
wizard
creature.
Yeah, I was going to say, especially if your wizard had a cat familiar.
Yeah.
Hey, there are times where things... There are times where DMs get to run you into strange ground. We were trekking through the tunnels. The tunnels turned from stone to worked metal with piping. We came to a ladder, climbed up the ladder, went through a grate into a dark alley. There was a great hubbub and commotion with light down at the end of the alley. We went down there and we saw this were-rat casting an enchantment, a were-rat wearing a wizard's hat, casting an enchantment over a massive crowd of people as he slid down the middle of the main street, surrounded by dancing lights. So we shot Mickey Mouse.
Ah!
It's
okay.
Was it one fun? Time,
oh, yeah! Once my players had to charter a boat to get to, like, a continent across the sea, and they boarded the Serenity.
For a 3-hour tour.
The weather started getting rough.
Captain Mal was there.
Oh yes.
Pretty good. Hey. I don't really have a story for this because I only ever get to DM and
wow.
What is the weirdest one you've put in players' hands?
There you go.
It's an item I created. It was a short sword called Fury. And it was for a Pathfinder game. It was a human bane short sword, and it was owned by this evil ranger who was like one of my players, like mortal enemy and rival. And so he had this sword that made him like super good at slaying humans, and human was his favorite enemy and all that rules fluff and stuff. But they ended up killing him real. A lot faster than I thought he would, which is why you should make all your NPCs have Doombots. And my player ended up getting the sword, and he used it to conquer his goals.
Red Skull.
And like it was a magic short sword +2, and it had a green miasma instead of lighting up magically or flaming or anything like that. And the hilt was a human femur, and the pommel was a skull.
I bet he's very popular at the taverns.
Yeah.
Well, he ended up throwing it into the ocean after at the end of the campaign, so that no one else could use it against anyone.
Oh, that's going to have to come back and bite somebody.
It is. It's an artifact now.
Sahugan! I was just thinking, Sahugan!
Yeah, because nothing lives in the ocean.
Nobody will ever get that.
Yep. It's going to make a comeback. But it's so popular. Like, it's not so popular. It's such a fond memory of his that he makes paper minis. On the set of one of his paper minis for the cover illustration, it's his character and he's wielding that sword.
Cool.
Yeah. Actually, I posted here. There's the image. The short sword that he's holding in his left hand. Like, I didn't tell him to do that. He just did that. That's something that he associated with the game and the character.
We'll try to put the link in the show notes for people to see if they are of any interest.
I'm sure they will.
So, Liz.
Yes?
Have anything?
As a player, no. Most of my most of my one or two plus weapons that I've ever had as the player have been just your standard run-of-the-mill things. So I don't, like Crispy, I don't have any player stories that I could tell. I did make up a plus one dagger for one of my cousins once that had some neat stuff that they didn't figure out the other powers until they got higher level.
So the weapon kind of leveled with them.
Right. It started out just as a plus one dagger, and the magic user character did not know that it had anything else to it. I kind of hinted at it when I gave it out. You know, basically I was, you know, saying that the mage's mentor gave the dagger to her when she was leaving to go out on her own. And he made the comment, like, it wants you to have it. It's like, what? What, what? It's like, you said it wants me to have it. It's like, no, no, I said I want you to have it. That's the trouble with young people these days. They never listen. Hope you were paying better attention last month when I taught you that missile spell.
Apparently not, if you think I need to have a dagger.
Well, that's actually not a bad idea, as far as the leveling idea.
Yeah, and the dagger had a, you know, intelligence and ego. So it decided, you know, as, you know, the DM, the dagger decided when its wielder should know about its other powers.
As it told the old guy, screw you, I'm hanging out with the hottie.
That's I'm tired of hanging out in this tower. Let me out.
You don't do anything interesting anymore.
Sit up here and gather dust.
Ooh, that reminds me of another one.
Uh-oh.
It was a plus one sword. It was also intelligent. It could speak. And it was totally convinced it was the most awesomest sword in all of awesomeness, and it should be the only weapon wielded in battle. And it should always be wielded in battle. And when it wasn't trying to start a fight, it was trying to convince the wielder to use it in a fight, mocking all of the other weapons that the wielder had, especially when they tried to use them. Why are you grabbing the bow again? You don't love me anymore. And yelling things around the corner like, hey, we're over here!
Let's fight!
I
have a weapon.
Go for the big orc!
In a Pathfinder game, but I didn't want to talk about it because it's part of my character's progression. But I'm playing this comically grimdark Magus, and that's like a fighter magic user in Pathfinder. And I'm what's called a Black Blade Magus, or a Blade Bound Magus. You get a Black Blade. Just a direct reference to Elric.
Mm-hmm.
And my sword's goal is to be like a weapon of legend, but my sword is kind of a douchebag. It thinks it's way more powerful than it is. And my guy is, like, comically grimdark, so we butt heads together. And you just reminded me of that. Not really going anywhere with that.
I've officially decided now, Crispy is, like, playing with Jack Black. He's just out of control.
Why?
Just the way you act sometimes. You remind me of, like, playing with Jack Black or something.
Like, I don't... Do I not understand? Like, the way I play games, or, like, the type of characters I play?
The way you play, the way you act. You're, like, you're that insane comedian type guy.
He's comically grimdark. In this, like, lighthearted world with, like, little tiny robots. He's every, like, pulp badass to ever exist without any of the other characteristics except being really grim.
Definitely fish out of water here.
But I do it on purpose. I don't know, I like to, when I establish characters, I like to,
I like to kind of make them tongue in cheek.
Yep.
Like a dwarf that's too short. So he goes around and has to prove that he's better than everyone.
And gets annoyed when people call him Shorty.
good character.
See, so, round nose, not pointy, not a gnome, dwarf.
So we talked about the most interesting weapons and things and full-on killing Mickey Mouse and so interesting armor and how do PCs treat these items. Not sure how would they treat the items. I don't know. Should treat them really good with respect, I think.
It kind of depends on the flavor of your game. Is it a high magic or a low magic? I mean, there are games where people go, oh, what, plus one swords? Yeah, throw that in the bag with the copper over there. Yeah. We'll leave that. Or it's, you know, you mean it's a sword that does something? It's not just a piece of metal?
It's an
awesome! It is the secret of steel! You know?
Yeah.
It's an S-word?
The classy enemies, cylinder-driven foil. You hear the lamentations of the women.
Get to the chopper.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, that's Riddle of Steel. My bad.
Oh. Sorry. I think Mike's had it now.
But no, the way PCs treat the items, again, it all depends on A, whether or not they're abundant, B, whether or not they're suitable to the players or not. Wow, it's another plus one longsword. Me and my trusty bow love your plus one longswords. Go away. You know?
Well, with the default classic D&D, plus one weapons and armor and so much, I won't say are as common as dirt, but they're in a lot of hands. It is not very hard to find.
I'm pretty stingy, like, as a rule with magic items, so I don't usually run into this. So anytime I actually hand out magic, it's a big deal.
So you trim any modules you might run?
Yeah, I'm more of a fan of giving out consumable magic items instead of, like, magic weapon and armor.
Mm-hmm. So potions and scrolls.
Yeah.
That get used up.
I'm very against the concept of a magic shop. I don't want them to go sell their plus one shield in the marketplace.
Yeah.
I'm also very much against the concept of the poorly locked chest. No, if there is a nice sword or nice armor or nice shield and they know about it, why would they not use it? You're going to have to pry it from their cold, dead, clutchy, kobold puppy fingers.
Yeah.
That's why I like B2.
Motif. I can't use that. It's got a Celtic motif. I'm
I'm Norse. It really
is not my idiom.
Yeah. Never mind the fact that it's an insanely powerful weapon. It's just not me.
Oh. That's a clue, Glabronig. I'm more of a Ulfred Sked.
Yeah.
Giant daughter.
Oh,
so
no! I'm Connor McCloud of Clan McCloud. I use a katana. Yeah.
I don't like the idiom.
I'm not Spanish. I'm Egyptian.
I definitely don't like that. It's a medium-sized belt, and us comic book fans are extra large. Anyway. So okay, I think that's beaten that down enough. DM Workshop heading up next.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him.
But this isn't science. It's more like black magic.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together. Welcome to the Dungeon Master's Workshop.
The Workshop for DMs. Let's talk a little bit more about the plus one weapons or creating them. Are we going to do them on the fly or we could do it by the book? You give it other abilities, names, maybe how often does it become an intelligent or have an ego? Mike.
Intelligent ego swords I usually have pretty rare. And they're going to have a story. And maybe they're pretty cool, but they're always going to have one little negative. I don't like weapons that are just plus five broadsword of whomping, you know? Like, no, there's going to be something that isn't pleasant, because that's folklore. Yeah. You know, nothing is perfect.
Okay. Like, you know, like, I've got an ogre knife.
It's kind of plus nine against
ogres. But you're not there. You're getting drunk.
All right, well, if there are any girls,
I don't care if that's a plus two crossbow of albatross slaying. You're not bringing it on my boat.
Exactly. That's terrible luck, isn't it? If you kill the albatross, your ship is doomed. One thing I wanted to ask Mike was, by the little brown books, aren't all magic weapons intelligent? Wasn't that originally what it was?
No. Not that I know of.
I'd read that somewhere, and I wanted to ask you about it.
I'd have to go look at that again, but I'm pretty sure... I'm not even sure that came up till Eldritch Wizardry.
Okay, maybe that's
the idea of swords with egos and intelligence. I'd have to look it up again. But yeah, I try to keep plus one weapons less, you know, about than common than, you know, more common than simple dirt. Because, you know, even if they are common, and, oh, it's just a plus one, big deal. You know, there's always those monsters that can only be hit
by a plus one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's like, well, yeah, you've got that bastard sword. Does all that
back up when the werewolves show up.
Yeah.
What I like to do to really annoy players is ones that go, oh, it's just a plus one sword, let me just throw that in the bag and never use it again. When it comes to those plus one monster creatures, and they have, like, oh, I have my plus three sword. No, it says you need a plus one weapon to hit it. Sorry.
Too many pluses.
Plus one.
Yeah.
It's like when you're playing, like, Sorry or Trivial Pursuit. You have to roll the exact number to get onto the winning space.
It teaches
okay,
them
guys, this plus one weapon didn't work. I'm moving up to plus two.
It teaches them to treat each weapon with great care and respect.
See, just lends one way that people having that bag of holding full of the armory. Okay, yeah. Go back in for this. Switch out for that.
This looks like a nine iron. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had players who did have literally had a bag of like plus three swords, but there was no magic in the world at that time, so they weren't magical, and I had to trick it away from them.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing to talk about. What do you do about players that come into your game with their characters from another game? And they're full of these, like, all these weapons, and you as a DM were just like, yeah, and didn't realize it, and all you're in the middle of the game, and he's like, I take out my plus five sword of ultimate slaying!
As a rule, I don't allow you to bring in characters from another game.
DMs will do that and not realize it. How would you handle it, Crispy, if you said...
And it's precisely because of that sort of thing that I don't.
Yeah.
Reach the point of, I play this cool character in another game. Well, fine. Roll up a character in my game, and you can play him or her like that character.
See, I don't even like that. That has led me to too many, like, moments.
Well, let's just say you both had a memory lapse, and Liz hit you over the head with a frying pan, Mike, and Crispy, you hit your head in the microphone, and you decide, again? Wait a minute. And you decide...
You're not supposed to talk about that, Mike.
Oh, sorry.
And you've decided to let someone play a character from another game, and you really didn't look it over, and you noticed in the middle of the game he has all these ultimate weapons, and you can't hit him or squat because his armor class is -4, and he's only level 2.
That's without my +5 shield.
Yeah, that's without his +5 shield. And it's Crispy playing the character. I don't know. How would you adjudicate that?
Well, first, they'd go to sleep.
No, I have an amulet that makes me immune to sleep spells.
There you go.
No, sorry. not a spell. You'd still have to go to sleep.
Oh, okay. No, I've got a ring of sustenance. I only have to sleep 2 hours a day.
Still gotta go to sleep.
That's still 2 hours.
Well, I have a magic rope that is a pocket dimension.
And if I missed all that, I deserve it.
Yeah.
As a DM.
Well, if you will remember, Mike, this was not in a D&D game, but in a different RPG altogether.
That will not be named.
Yes, a certain player who made up his character, and then in teeny tiny little letters on the back of the character sheet, he wrote in vampire.
Now, that was D&D. That was D&D.
I thought that was Champions.
No, it was D&D. Because he was like, well, you approved it. You said so. And I'm like, okay, okay, fine. All right, one morning, you're at the tavern. What do you do? Well, I go outside and poof. Okay, you're dead. Roll up another character. And he walked right into it, so it was even funnier.
Literally walked right into it?
Haha. But I'm Ching.
He really wrote vampire in little letters on the back of the sheet.
Yes. Well, normally I don't like going after players who have stuff, you know, but like you said, you know, if that's what happened, I would have to make some maneuvering. If nothing else, because everybody else is second level, so you throw stuff at Mr. Second Level with a -4 armor class, etc., to make a challenge for him, are going to just cut through the rest of the party, and that's not fun for them.
Yeah, you punish the party or punish the player?
Yeah.
Or punish nobody and just deal with it.
Now, here's a question. Your average dwarf or elf, I'm talking NPCs.
Yeah.
How likely are they to have plus weapons or armor?
More likely than humans. Just because elves, magic, dwarves, smithing. I don't always equate plus... Like, I personally don't equate plus one to magic. I also equate it to... Craftsmanship.
Yeah, Mark's a masterwork.
I did that for a while. I tried, you know, I was working just to say that it's not really magic. It just is so awesome. It's magical, I don't know, magically delicious. Or
hey. You did that for a while. It makes me believe that you stopped doing it.
Yeah.
What problems arose? Why did you stop doing it?
It just didn't seem to click into, dare I say, D&D mainstream.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. And I guess I didn't intentionally go away from it. It just, that's how things worked out. And, you know, it just didn't seem to fit as, because then, once I said that, everybody had questions. It was like, well, why exactly is it plus one? You know, does that mean that I can get a master smith to forge me plus one, fill in the blanks? And if not, why not? And then, of course, you run into the whole elven chain thing, which, you know, is very rare and expensive, but every freaking NPC elf you've ever met seeks to wear one. So as Hackmaster says, you know, mug one early in your career.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, so...
You can mix those two. You don't have to necessarily go to one of the extremes or the other. I mean, yes, you have that thing that is the... It's like that one element where they say, this is the sword that this smith made out of his entire career, the one time that the gods were with him and he made his masterpiece item, his signature, singular, superior, above the pale item. You can call that a plus one.
Yeah. Like, one thing that I do is, it's craftsmanship, and it's also the materials made, used to make it. Full on, you're a dragon guy, right? You're one of those dudes who's read every issue of Dragon and has, like, issue numbers memorized, right?
No, that's what I have the CD for.
Yeah.
Okay. There's an issue of
CD collection.
There's an issue of Dragon I was reading. I have a physical copy of it a couple weeks ago. That was talking about making items out of different, like, orichalcum or Damascus and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. Always. That's a recurring type of article.
So, like, that's what kind of, like, oh, yeah, so that's masterwork. And what I've been thinking about doing to make magic items more special and more memorable is say you have, like, there's the jewel-hilted sword. That's a trope that exists.
Yeah.
What if your sword is made of diamond? That's something that
I think... investment property that goes into a case, in a vault, and is used to fund the rest of my adventures.
Well, I mean, it's not like it'll ever break.
Shatterspell says not.
It's diamond, though.
Well, diamond can shatter.
They're quite easily shatterable. That's how you cut them. You shatter them very precisely in a controlled circumstance.
Mm.
Yeah. They're the hardest crystal, but, you know...
I see where you're going with that. And again, the other bits that deal with this is, okay, after you've got your
magic out there. Let's go to another D&D tropism, okay? The glowing weapon versus the not glowing weapon. Let's go back to where that really kind of comes from. Let's talk Tolkien for a second here. You've got Sting and all the other weapons and swords that they pulled out of the troll lair, Glamdring, all that. Mm-hmm. And then you've also got the knives that they got originally from the Barrow-Wight's lair that Pippin and Merry had. Those were not the, this is jumping between the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings, but again,
yeah.
They got weapons that were magical, that weren't the glowing weapons that were crafted, for the elf wars, the orc wars, but they were superior weapons. They were your little magical plus weapons that they had available to them versus the magical plus weapon. Those might have been the crafted weapons that were equivalent to a plus one versus something like Sting or Glamdring and whatnot, which are plus one, plus two weapons that have additional powers like glows in the presence of enemies or glows in the presence of orcs.
Yeah.
And that's an ability that you could theoretically give to a plus one weapon that makes it a little more interesting without, making it what amounts to more significantly more powerful.
Yeah, I like the idea of swords having kind of unique abilities built on them. Like, even if it's just, like, plus one or plus four against X enemy type. I've always really liked that, because that's kind of how I think of Sting and the goblin foe weapons.
Plus one short sort of silence. It doesn't make you move silent. It just does not ring against anything it strikes against.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have anyone hear the fact that you're having a fight.
Hmm. Yeah. That's pretty cool, actually.
You're welcome.
But I think,
what about you, Vince?
Okay.
Go ahead, Vince.
What?
What would you do?
I don't know.
Eat a bug.
Taco. Sorry,
I'll just go ahead and say what I was going to say,
I'm trying to fix the audio. Sorry.
You can have these, these little tiny bonuses, and you can have these pluses, or even. I wish I could speak English sometimes.
Sure.
You can have, these special materials, and that's kind of how you get up into, your plus five weapons and stuff like that. Like, you can compound all these things and make some really cool, weapons of legend, which I think is what your plus fours and plus fives should really be.
This is crafted from star metal from the heart of this crater.
Hmm.
And whatnot. This is the only place on the planet where this metal comes from.
This is a one-of-a-kind weapon. There was only enough star metal to make this one sword.
The highest mountain and the highest plain.
Yeah. What's up, Vince?
To the highest mountain and the highest plain, there's the metal you need.
Yeah, and it's for a specific function, which is fighting demons or something like that.
So basically, elves and dwarves, you're theoretical NPC types could very easily have a plus one bow or sword or something, perhaps forged for the goblin wars of blah 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 or whatever.
Well, they were around for them, so they're like that. They're big in being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's very expensive, because when you show up with that goblin wars weapon, the elf or the dwarf who notices you is going to ask you some pointed questions about where did you get that? Did you earn that? Who did you take that from? And if the answer is not a good answer...
Found it.
Found it, I did.
In a hole. It was a big hole.
After I dug it, yeah. That had their, all these bones that were in the way, but none of them got up.
Yeah. Well, none to speak of, anyway.
Anyway, how about I like this notion here. I've never thought about it, but intelligent armor.
Yeah.
That's kind of a neat idea. I've never thought about using intelligent armor before.
Yeah, everybody thinks of swords, and one of the things I thought about, it's not armor per se, but thinking back on the Arthurian legends, everybody obsesses over Excalibur, but Excalibur's scabbard actually prevented Arthur from being cut. Which, if you think about it, is actually more useful than Excalibur, really.
Definitely, yeah.
But, of course, everybody just goes gaga over the sword. Nobody ever thinks, oh, well, you got a scabbard. Big deal.
It's always magic swords, too. Like, it's never, like, intelligent axe or intelligent quarterstaff.
Mm.
Actually, it's a buck and a quarter quarterstaff, but I'm not telling him that.
or an intelligent Bill Gassarm.
Or an intelligent hoodie.
chainmail hoodie.
A chainmail hoodie. It's intelligent.
Chainmail hoodie. That's a thing.
Yo, boys.
The ATT crossbow. He just wants to reach out and touch someone.
Oh.
Ba-ding, ba-dum, ching.
Well, there we go. Glenn wasn't here, so full on put in. Yeah. His cheesy line for us. Anyway.
Right. So, intelligent arm, I don't know, like a magic shield that, like, speaks to you would be pretty cool.
Huh? Especially like, if they glowed.
Yeah.
Like the weapons?
Yeah. Like, I think of Eric the Cavalier from the D&D cartoon shield.
Oh, God.
We forgive you.
I like that.
It's a cool
like,
shield, though.
Yeah, but that was the worst character in the world.
Cavalier. No, cool shield, go to goblins and have the Shield of Wonders.
Yeah.
Which Ooh. Stats for which have been posted, by the way.
Besides, that was Ralph the Mouth talking for Eric. How could that not be a cool character?
Wasn't so many ways.
Okay, Michael.
While Eric was annoying, I think out of all of the characters in the show, he had the most, you know, growth as a character.
True.
Because, you know, he started out totally annoying, and he was still annoying at the end, but, you know, he had learned some things about, you know, being there for his friends and, you know, had made some tough choices.
Unlike Sheila.
And, you know, characters
like
Sheila's Hank.
Sheila's, like, the most boring.
Yeah, characters like Hank, who start out being, you know, just good and noble to begin with, there's not as much room for them to grow as a character and, you know, have them undergo really big changes, especially in a kid's cartoon show.
Yeah, like, I actually really like the character development for that show. Like, Hank kind of, he has his morals challenged towards the end, like, do we kill Venger or do we not kill Venger? And then Eric is this spoiled little brat who's got, you know, he's got some issues with his parents and stuff like that. And he gets friends and he becomes less intolerable.
Not tolerable, less intolerable.
There we go.
There's a linguistic difference there.
Yeah.
Yes. Little kid, he smashed.
What is that? Believe it or not, personal growth.
Hey.
Well, I mean, as long as we're talking about the show, for instance, I could plausibly see Hank's bow being a plus one bow. Because its magic isn't in the hitting so much, it's...
Its magic is in the... It is a never-ending quiver.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd make it a plus two before a plus one.
Because nobody respects plus one.
I think plus one is great.
Yeah, but it just seems too... For that particular weapon, a plus one, that's too... I don't know how to explain it. It doesn't seem like it's right.
How about plus one to hit, plus two to damage?
No.
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 No. And that's from the curmudgeon, Michael.
Grump, grump.
And I think, you know, what Vince was saying, that's the whole point why someone should try to give a plus one weapon, you know, some extra, you know, bennies and things to make it, you know, less boring and less you know.
Just be careful when you're applying these that you're not making it like a plus equivalence of power. So that it might only have a plus one that gets involved with, you know, to hit and damage. But you've essentially made a plus nine sword here, because you've given it 9 billion things to do.
I wouldn't see, like, if the plus one sword was, like, during combat you get plus one to your strength. Just to make it something different. But only during combat that happens. So that might, you know, might give you a little bit of an edge. It may not give you any edge, but it still acts as a plus one sword.
When wielded or just when carried?
When wielded. That also makes a difference. When wielded, yeah, good point. When wielded in battle, you get plus one to your strength. Otherwise, it's just a regular plus one weapon.
The thing with basic, though, is that plus one to your strength is only going to sometimes be a real benefit, depending on, like, what you're doing for stats. If you're going, like, original D&D.
It's going to be a benefit for 50% of the characters who ever wield it, just because their stat just happens to be one below where the next bonus
is. Like, they're at 17 or 18 or say, 15 or 12.
That's kind of why 3E went the way of flat bonus, stat bonus type weapons and events are in factors of 2 every time, just to ensure that it will be a benefit for whoever picks it up.
Yeah. Which I think for this particular sword that you're saying, I think giving it another, like Mike had said, another additional plus blah 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 damage against something.
You know what, this isn't the Crybaby edition of D&D, so everything's not fair. If you want to go play the Crybaby edition of D&D, you go play 4th edition, alright?
Well, it's like, why give a mechanical benefit that doesn't actually give any kind of mechanical
because
benefit?
Because not every
it's
weapon...
Not technically always meant to ask,
not every
how
weapon...
How can I use this? What does it do?
Now you're getting me mad. Not every weapon in the world is made just for your character. So, weapons happen
to
be put there because of plot lines, storylines. Maybe that plus one sword, you have to return to somebody because it's their weapon. It's not there for your taking.
It's like when I put strength bows in the game that are too strong for someone. You can't draw it. It wasn't made for you.
Well, like Liz was saying, it might also be a way of you can start it at plus one and just, you know, scale it. And its pluses are basically, you know, depending on what your level is.
Yeah, like my dagger. When I gave it to my player, as far as she knew, it was just a plus one dagger. And its other abilities did not show up until later as she got more powerful as a character. And the dagger became more powerful along with her as it revealed more of its strengths.
It just got me mad because it reminded me of Gen Con last year when someone said that one of the events that the Dead Game Society was running, it didn't go off. So it ruined his Gen Con experience.
Oh, please.
And I was just, I wrote back to him like, dude, Gen Con isn't just for you. Gen Con is for everybody. Yeah. If a Dungeon Master happens to be sick, he's sick. He's not going to come to a game just so you can play and have your experience.
Why not?
Although I will say, if he's going to Gen Con just for that one event, I can see why he would be ruined. But on the other hand, it's like...
It's not like he was...
I don't know that I'd pay for Gen Con just to get into one old
thing,
school game.
But it wasn't like that.
There's plenty of other cons you can do that at.
Dead Game Society offered him seats in 2 other games, and it, so one of the other guys came up to all run a pickup game. So it's not like he didn't have nothing to do.
Oh, yeah, so he did end up old school gaming. So.
No, he didn't. He walked away pissed off.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying, like, every magic item should be tailored to your players. Like, it's definitely a good idea to give them some magic items that are tailored to them. But I think a general all-purpose system for, like, what magic items you're giving out. Or at least for tailoring their abilities. Like, something that could help someone who's wielding the sword is always a better idea.
Yeah.
I guess I'm too Gygaxian in my ways, that's all. What are you going to do?
Grump, grump.
You can throw things in there, that little bonus that's got its little negative in it, like the sword that as you wield it, it flows over your hand. You can't drop it. You can't be disarmed. When you want to pick something up, you can't drop it.
You can't cheese it.
Or like something that's like, this. Oh man, this sword is really great, but it's clearly probably really evil. And is going to corrupt you in some way.
Yeah, there was a... In the...
Even if it actually doesn't do anything, it just looks horribly evil. Walk
that
down.
Like, that's... Fury did that. Like, I toyed with the idea of making it evil, but then I'm like, no, it's evil enough already. Its hilt is a friggin' human femur.
Yeah, in the Judges Guild Book of Wondrous Weapons, they had a short sword called Titan Folly that was plus one, but it was intelligent and could communicate and was always trying to get its wielder to go after monsters, telling them that they detect, say, a kobold in that room.
But it's actually like a
It's like a beholder or something beholder. Once you open the door, and it's like, oh, crap. Which I thought was kind of cool.
The incompetent intelligence weapon is another fun thing.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to random encounters now.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up must leave. Presto!
You will come up no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
Random encounters is what was Fulon was talking about before. NPCs commonly have the plus weapons, and if so, how do they acquire them? Forge, enchant, blah, blah, blah. Like he said, good point. If they have a magic shield, it's not going to be locked away in that chest. They'll be using it. Or at least the leader will be using it for some reason.
Yeah. Assuming, of course, that they're still, you know, combatants, I suppose, you know, older, retired people might keep that magic shield hanging over their fireplace or something.
And that's a cool, like... That would be a cool thing to introduce into the story. Like, say they meet an old mentor who takes a liking to this intrepid young adventurer and gives them their magic shield.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's a neat, rememberable story as well.
And on occasion, I've had innkeepers who are retired adventurers and may, you know, still keep a, girdle of frost giant strength so that they can act as their own bouncer. Especially when you have those parties of, oh, yeah, we're badass, you know, we're going to go into this tavern and shove everybody around. I'm not paying for my drinks. What are you going to do about it, zero-level commoner?
What's up?
Well, I'm going to put you through that wall. That's what I'm going to do.
My hoodie plus five, man.
Yeah. Do they wear the belt at all times, or do they, like, wouldn't that make more sense?
Just always? The apron? Yeah, I mean, kegs are heavy, man.
Yeah, and he could wear it to be his own bouncer. I mean, he wouldn't show off with it or anything, because the whole point is to, you know, keep it for emergencies, but,
Keep it real.
I had a halfling tavern at one time, tavern keeper, who wore a ring of regeneration on his toe. Well, I mean, he's a halfling, you know.
Yeah.
But who looks at toes, you know, for... I check his toes for a ring.
I had a barbarian. Used to punch.
Oh, we have Ahmed. Ahmed the Grinning Goblin. He's the proprietor of the Grinning Goblin Bar. He wields the short sword of quickness. He wears the boots of the quickling, and he wears a ring of speed and a ring of haste. He gets around to take care of things.
Ahmed is, like, magically aged to be a million years old.
But he's a goblin, so who cares? It looks like Yoda or something.
Old I am, smart I am, too.
But yeah, I tend to think that dwarves would generally have plus one. I mean, that's also a way, well, it's just zero or first level, you know, dwarf, big deal. Well, you know, you get a group of dwarves, especially like a 50 or 100, get them all plus one plate and plus one weapons, they're suddenly not quite as wussy as certain characters might think.
Especially when you have them in an enclave. If you have a dwarven settlement, if you have a dwarven mine, if you have a dwarven vault, if you have a dwarven craftworks, expect to find things there. Because that's where they keep them. And they don't let them out. Unless you really, really earn it.
Mm. Or if it was stolen by a goblin and, you know, you kill the goblin later and take it because it was looted or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the idea of NPCs having magic weapons, but I don't know if it should be as common for, like, dwarves. The whole army has them. Like, usually it's like their special forces attack squads. Yeah. Like, magic should be, I think, by default, rare.
Or like the lieutenant or something having it.
Well, yeah, but wouldn't you say that dwarves in and of themselves are a magical race?
Yeah.
No, for me, dwarves are actually the antithesis of them. They're so non-magical.
So non-magical.
That's where their magic comes from, the clerics.
They're smiths and the clerics by design. Yeah.
You see, I'm the reverse. I see, you know, dwarves far more likely to have magic weapons and armor than, quite frankly, elves. Because, don't even get me started. Where do elves forge in the frickin' woods and the frickin' treehouse in the frickin' middle of frickin' nowhere?
plus one with bow and sword
for no reason.
They
Girl
dangle
laughing, cracker munching, teeth slurping, green leotard.
Wow. Well, Mike, they find that extra strong branch and they go out there and forge on it. Okay.
Again, that's the whole difference between the two of them. You can expect to find the dwarves working their forge at the foot of a live volcano, whereas the elves, well, we're going to have our magic users make the heat, and we're going to forge that way. That's why it's a magical sword.
It's like a hippie. Oh, we're totally going to go in the forest.
We're going to the greenway.
Yeah, man. We're going to smoke some herb and chant this sword, man.
And, of course, the other thing with the elves is they're all big about having other people do things for them so they don't have to be bothered. So they might be a little more likely to put the magic items out there for others if they've earned them or to do a thing for the elves.
I see the elves basically getting other races to make it for them. Yes, I could buy that. Or even, you know, you forge the weapon, the elf will put the enchantment on it. Sure, I could see that. Hmm. But the actual forging just never grabbed me.
Elven chainmail is produced in the forest.
I am Riboflavin Finkelflower, and I wear mythical chainmail, which I have made in my bush.
Wow. Anyway.
The first name of the elf was Riboflavin?
Yes. Took that from Dungeon Bastard. Every time he mentions elves, I am Sucrose Nitri or something like that.
I'm done.
You're done?
I'm out.
See, again, you can still swing it. It's just much more magically involved for the elves. Unless you have one who actually likes sweating, and no elf likes to sweat, they're going to summon the fire elemental.
And
they're going to have a conversation with the local dragon and have him, you know, the gold dragon who can breathe fire, who owes them a favor or they want to owe a favor to. He'll just breathe on things for them to smelt.
My like homebrew elves are so different from like what you guys describe. It's
totally different.
It's good.
So different. They're so metrosexual.
I don't know. I think dwarves, I always think of their magic weapons being enchanted through like divine weapons, like they're doing these works for their gods, and then elves. Well, I could see smithing, you know, elves are always like super athletic looking and like GQ model-y, you know, they got those muscles somehow. But being like arcane, like their magic weapons
elves,
are
elves have muscles.
Apparently, in Christian's world,
Peter
they do.
Jackson, yeah.
Well, okay, sorry. I yes,
and everything else that came out after Lord of the Rings. Bah.
I don't know. Every elf I've seen is this skinny, scrawny little thing.
Exactly.
You need to watch the Dragon Age videos on YouTube. The Dragon Age Reckoning.
The video game Dragon Age? Yeah.
Yeah, the ones with Felicia Day.
Wait, Felicia Day's in that?
Oh, yes. The live-action Dragon Age video.
Oh, yeah, okay.
On Dragon Age Reckoning, yes.
No.
I was thinking Dragonlance for a second. Too many dragons.
The last elf thing I saw on live on YouTube was The Legend of Neil, and that's about it.
I like Legend of Neil.
Yeah, Legend of Neil about Legend of Zelda.
Anyway, I think have we beat this into the ground?
Not yet. There's one more thing to talk about. Yeah, why is everyone always only talking about elves and dwarves? What about everything else out there that has opposable thumbs and an interest in making pointy bits that you can shove into other people's soft bits?
All
right. Wow. Halflings, goblins, kobolds, orcs.
Yep, it's
whatever
lightning
else
round
out
time.
There.
Halflings too lazy. Orcs, goblins, too stupid. Giants, magic weapons. Ogres, too stupid. Orcs, too stupid.
No, women, no women, no
women. Gnomes don't exist.
No, I like lurts, so orcs, not too stupid. Urukai,
and halflings, I could see them doing certain weapons, but it would probably be the ones that kind of digress with farming
daggers.
Implements. Flails.
Pitchforks.
Plus three. Pole arms. You know, that sort of military pick.
Sword of slime.
It's the pitchfork of expedient farming.
plus two cleaver of teppanyaki.
Teppanyaki?
Yes, the art of doing all the show on the table.
Benihana chefs.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Boom, boom. Shh.
You can.
I surprised Liz didn't fail
hay twice as fast.
Yeah. So, what about plus one slime swords?
Plus what?
Slime swords.
You mean wielded by a slime?
No, no. It's like a slime sword. Every time you attack, slime comes off of it.
Ugh.
Just think of the possibilities with that.
Especially with a fumble.
Yeah. No, that'd be kind of cool. Like the slime, like you hit the person, and the slime goes on the armor and starts eating away at the armor or something, or the slime like makes them slip or fall. Or
I assume that whoever wields the slime sword is not vulnerable to the slime. Is it a cursed slime sword?
No, it's a magic weapon, a slime sword.
Huh.
It could be clerics of Jewablex, maybe.
It could be the Slugman from outer space.
Or the Slugman from outer space.
Yeah. Steve the Alien. Remember?
Could you have variations on the slime sword where it's like the sword of like black pudding?
Yeah, you can also
eats away armor when you hit.
You can also say that every time you say "I don't know," you get slimed.
I think we beat this topic to death.
I was waiting to see if anybody got that.
You can't do that on television.
And I guess that's going to wrap up the show tonight. It's been a great time hosting the last show. And I guess
bye, Vince!
Yeah,
it was a good one.
It was fun having Full On Gamer finally be able to do a podcast with Mr. Full On Gamer.
Yeah!
It was fun meeting you on the web and in person back at NTRPGCon, and we'll just do this again sometime.
Yeah, cool. I'll have to come on your show and curmudgeon it up, so...
Now you just need to get an RFI, and you've got all three.
The only person to do the trifecta is Crispy.
I've already done the trifecta. I was a guest.
I don't step on my toes. Well, I've done it multiple times, so shut up.
Well, you were on RFI, Full On Gamer?
Huh?
You were on...
I think I've been there.
You were on Roll for Initiative?
Somewhere I've been in there once.
I think you were a voicemail.
Yeah, that doesn't count full on.
Yeah, voicemail is...
I still win.
Calling us with a voicemail and yelling at us does not count as being on the show, okay?
Crispy?
Yes, Crispy? Mike.
Lynn has asked me to be on Thaco's Hammer whenever they're reviewing one of the historical things, so...
Uh-oh.
I'll Mike, be stepping on your toes.
Mike will be doing the next person of the trifecta.
Sorry.
Yes, the WGPRN family is all around.
And Crispy hits me with the plus one slime sword.
And you said, I don't know. So let's end the show.
Plus one Grey Ooze sword.
We're heading down the lonely road, and I'm slinging the slime sword at Crispy, who keeps saying, I don't know, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm dual-wielding maces of flatulence.
Ew. And Liz is saying, I can't believe I'm involved with these people. Where's Mike? I need a frying pan.
And I'm running from the elf Riboflagin Fingleflower and his big muscles.
Mike is trying to find a tree to go forge some products on.
That's right, on a limb.
On a limb. And that'll conclude the show.
And Liz?
Yes?
What is she doing?
She's saying, I can't believe I'm involved with these people. Where's my frying pan so I can hit Michael over the head?
That's right.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Hey, Chica had a plus one frying pan.
Of slime.
Speaking of plus one weapons.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
It's a plus one frying pan of bacon.
Ooh.
Everything is better with bacon.
Bacon.